Welcome to The Wall of Soundtrack, a show where we discuss the music and soundtracks behind the very best TV shows and motion pictures. This episode was taken from a live stream that SciShock Ford and I did on the music and soundtrack behind David Leitch's Marvel sequel film, Deadpool 2. Hope you enjoy. What's up, everybody? It's Andrew from Rotunes Reviews, and today we are covering Deadpool 2, the sequel to the original Deadpool movie, and I have here with me Cy Shackelford. What's up, Cy?
What's up, Andrew? What's up, folks? How y'all doing? Andrew, how you doing, man?
Doing good, man. Glad to finally get around to do this. I know we've been talking about it for a while.
Yeah, we have been for so long already, but like last week, I was like, you know what? Just pick up your skirt, grab your balls, and just fucking do it already.
Yeah,
I said that to myself actually. I wasn't saying that to you.
No, I mean it was a good kind of kick in the rear end for me as well, because I was, you know, we just haven't gotten around to it. So now we finally are, man, and I'm excited because this movie was just when I watched it two nights ago, and it's just funny, man. It just that's what I love about. I just like Ryan Reynolds, man. He's just such a funny dude.
He's the ultimate troll, especially as Deadpool. Yeah.
Yeah.
And with this film, yeah, reviewing it for the podcast now, looking at it for the soundtrack, that was the first time I've seen it. I've seen the film since I saw it in the theaters a few years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I never got a chance to see it when it came out in theaters, but this film actually did better than the first one. I mean, like,
really?
Yeah, in the box office. It did better. I think it got like this film garnered like $785 million in the box office. That's like really good.
That is good worldwide. Yeah. And check it now that Disney has gotten this property back, and if they do it right, like an adult version of Disney or a rated R version of Disney, they can go a billion.
Yeah. Easily. And dude, I mean, like, I feel like even with the soundtrack, I mean, they came out like, you know, just, they went hard with this soundtrack, and even more with the kind of like the comedic, you know, value. And I mean, they went hard with this soundtrack.
Yeah, they did. They did. And a lot of the songs, they're so lighthearted, but you juxtapose them with the dark, humorous scenes in which they're used in. It's like, okay, I get why you use it now. It's a perfect fit.
Yeah.
It's dark humored, but a perfect fit.
Yeah. I mean, they like Mr. Sandman, like we were talking about in the first film. That I feel like they did a lot more of that in this film, kind of like with the juxtaposition, and we'll get into that in just a second. But yeah, man, I'm excited to do it. Let's get into this.
All right, let's do it.
All right, so the first track here is All Out of Lud by Ted Kaplan. It's the opening song, and this is when Wade is suicidal.
He's laying on them barrels of oil in his apartment, and like, he lit a cigarette lighter and like, what are you doing? And you hear the song All Out of Love in the background. It's like, where's Vanessa?
Yeah.
Then it's like, he lights the whole thing on fire. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. And then you kind of catch up right later on. Like, you know, you figure out what happened and kind of the events that transpire. But this song, man, it's, and then he's, and then they show the Wolverine figurine, right?
Oh, like, yeah. They stay trolling the X-Men Origins Wolverine movie, especially the first one that Ryan Reynolds was in.
Yeah, that ongoing feud, you know, it's really...
Yeah, it's, feud.
Yeah.
With, it's really just tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, with Hugh Jackman, I guess, because I guess what Ryan Reynolds is married to what? Scarlett Johansson?
Used to be. Now he's married.
Yeah.
Blake Lively.
Okay. So I guess they were... but I guess Hugh Jackman was like good friends with Scarlett Johansson, so he was kind of giving him a hard time on set. He's like, you better be nice to her.
Most likely, yeah. And this is Ryan Reynolds' way of getting back at him.
Yeah, yeah. So,
like I said, he's the ultimate troll.
Yeah, he is, and he makes this movie just so funny, man. So yeah, that was a nod to the X-Men Origins film,
and the first film too, the first Deadpool film, where in his apartment is like a throwaway scene where he has a Wolverine, or a Deadpool action figure from that very same film.
Yeah, and he's doing some sort of like voodoo, quasi voodoo, like mutilation thing.
Yeah, like stab it or whatever. And like all you need now is some like decapitated chicken heads.
Yeah. It's like that movie Predator, right? With the, mm-hmm. Yeah. But, all right. So we go to the next track here. That's, that is X Gonna Give It To You by DMX. Gotta love DMX, man. You gotta, yeah. Rest in peace. Amazing song, but it is played in the Japan scene?
Yeah. Whereas it was used in the ending fight scene in the first film. Yeah. And it's because in the first film, how the group with him, the Negasonic Teenage Warhead and Colossus were X-Men. Yeah. They had to use X Gonna Give It To You because of the connotation.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it fits well with the in your face kind of comedy of the film too. I mean, you're going to get that dose of comedy. It's going to be all kinds of and action too. I mean, that's kind of Deadpool.
Action.
I mean,
yeah, Deadpool and action, a violent, slapsticky, cartoonish action. They're synonymous.
Yeah, exactly. So this was, you know, a great track to put in there. The next one's pretty funny. 9 to 5 by Dolly Parton.
This one right here. I was like, wait a minute, Dolly Parton song. Are y'all serious? I mean, I know y'all go wherever, but Dolly Parton.
Exactly, right? Yeah. It's almost like, you know, a nod to the other film, the first film, where you hear Mr. Sandman, which that was kind of the dark humor with that as well. Was just ridiculous.
When Francis is experimenting up on him, yeah.
Yeah. So I liked it. I mean, I think it, again, it fits in well. Dolly Parton, you know, she usually writes like, you know, like love songs, like, you know, positive songs. And this one was, I don't know, like you said, it was kind of the complete opposite of what we were
working
expecting.
9 to 5. Yeah. I guess because the melody is what's it called, put side by side with the violence, because he's going on a world tour just killing people left and right.
And that's because of the revenge, right, for Vanessa. He was going after all the hitmen and
anybody who will lead him to whoever was behind Vanessa's death. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd be mad. Sorry, I'd be mad too. Morena Baccarin is fine as hell.
I agree with you on that. So the next track was "Escape" by Rupert Holmes. It's the Pina Colada song, and this I feel like is a node to the MCU. Really, the Guardians of the Galaxy first film.
Yeah, because they use it there. Yeah.
Yeah. So. And it was used, you know, it was funny because you wouldn't expect it for that scene. I mean, it's just two guys sitting out on the back of a truck. And then here comes, you know, Cable. He comes
Josh
in.
Brolin.
Yeah, Josh Brolin. And he messes them up pretty. And he was great, too, in this movie, man.
Like, this is a funny take on Cable. I mean, we never seen Cable on screen before, but Brolin, given how he's a hell of a good actor, and he played Thanos the same year too in the MCU films, yeah, he pulled Cable off. Yeah. The ultra seriousness, the fighting old man in him and whatnot.
Yeah, you should. I was watching last night. I was watching. There's like this show where, like, actors try on the BBC where they try to make each other laugh, and it was Ryan Reynolds versus Josh Brolin. And like, who could make each other laugh more? And dude, it was hysterical. Like,
who won?
Ryan Reynolds won, but of course, right? Shocker there.
Yeah. But shocker, yeah.
It was funny, man. They were just knocking on each other so hard. It was you know, like Ryan Reynolds was saying that Josh Brolin looked like a dressed like a young George Hamilton or something, and.
Because he looks orange.
Yeah, and he was like, you're so old, I could smell it, you know. Or
that's funny. Brolin's in his 50s.
Yeah, and funny. He's like, what's your favorite color, Josh? Mediocre.
Wow. Yeah, Ryan Reynolds. It wouldn't surprise me if he wrote a lot of the jokes in Deadpool himself.
Yeah, and then he was Josh Brolin was just going after him about Green Lantern.
Oh yeah.
he was like, did you even watch the movie, Ryan? He's like. No, he's like, the editor didn't even watch it.
It's a roast back and forth. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great, man.
I saw what's it called? I saw something. I think it was the same show where Chris Hemsworth and Jennifer Lawrence were on there. And Jennifer Lawrence says to him, your acting is worse than the entire cast from Saved by the Bell.
Oh, jeez. Yeah,
yeah, ultimate, that's pretty
ultimate,
bad.
Ultimate trolling session, but but yeah, man, this song, classic ode to the MCU film franchise, specifically Guardians of the Galaxy, the first film. This next one I wasn't as familiar with. It's Nobody Speak by DJ Shadow.
Yeah, I actually have that record.
Okay.
Yeah, it's from The Mountain Will Fall by DJ Shadow, which came out in 2016, I want to say.
Okay.
And this song, Nobody Speak, with the that joint. Yeah, that sample's been used so many times by different people. But here he features Run the Jewels on it, and Run the Jewels, Run the Jewels, RTJ, they are masters. They'll give you a master class in shit talking hip hop.
And I mean, the title kind of fits in really well with this scene, right, where they're kind of auditioning or recruiting people for the X-Force.
And it could be a slight jab at Ryan Reynolds in the first Deadpool movie when his mouth got sewed shut.
Yeah.
Nobody speak. Yeah.
And I mean, go ahead.
The X-Force tryouts.
Yeah.
What did you think of that?
That was wild, but was funny though at the same time. I mean, yeah, trolling the X-Men.
I didn't expect a Shatterstar. I'm good at everything. I'm like, you made him a douche. Terry Crews was Bedlam. The Vanisher was revealed to be Brad Pitt.
When he got electrocuted, right? He like just shows up like for a second.
And a Domino, Zazie, I forget her name. Zazie something.
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy that scene where they jump out of the plane, and they all end up taking them, like axing themselves, you know.
Yeah, instantly, just like that. I mean, y'all hyped them up in the trailer, but what's it called in the film? Only to kill them off that quick.
Yeah,
it was like the Suicide Squad, like what they did in the second Suicide Squad film at the beginning of the film, where they had like guys like Pete Davidson get killed off just like that.
Yeah, it was kind of a bummer, man. It's kind of a letdown because I wanted to see Terry Crews. I mean, I think he's funny.
Yeah, me too. I wanted to see these X-Force people in action. I mean, Domino, that's all we got left, and her power is good luck, which is a power. Fuck what Deadpool has to say.
Exactly. But they played a good song during that scene. It was Thunderstruck by AC/DC, one of my favorite bands.
Oh, yeah. That's a hell of a classic hard rock song.
Yeah, off the Razor's Edge album. Which is a really good album. And I think like this, this song, man, I love hearing it in like a sports arena or something. It just gets you really pumped up. And, also I feel like kind of a nod to the MCU franchise again, you know, Tony Stark, in Iron Man, they use, you know, a lot of AC/DC in Iron Man. So, I thought it was cool how they did it in this. And, I think was fit really well with, you know, the intense little drop-in they do.
didn't what's it called? Wasn't an AC/DC song used in Guardians?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't remember that.
I mean, I can't remember the song, though, but the album had a yellow cover to it.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll come to me.
Yeah, but
this scene.
Yeah, this is great.
You go. You talk.
No, I mean, it's I mean they're just classic rock and roll band. I mean, have had songs in a lot of action movies, like I think Last Action Hero. They had one with Arnold Schwarzenegger, Big Gun. That's actually a really good song too.
That was the first single off that, and the video I remember the video for it. I remember when it was 93, the summer of 93 when that soundtrack came out. They had like four big singles that were always on MTV. Big Gun was the biggest one.
Yeah,
so to speak.
And I think it was the first song that they recorded with Rick Rubin, and then Rick Rubin would go on to produce their next album, which was Hard as a Rock, and I can't remember the name of it. I'm blanking on it, but Ballbreaker, that's what it was. That's the album, Ballbreaker. Yeah. Okay. And that's a good album too, but yeah, Rick Rubin, man, that guy's just so epic.
He can produce any genre.
Yeah,
he proved that. He's like hip hop, heavy metal, hard rock, country music with Johnny Cash.
Yeah, I mean, he even did that Rage cover album, Renegades. That was really good.
I have that. Yeah, that was a good album.
Yeah, that one. I was like, I thought it sounded so good. I thought they were originals at one point. You know, I was just me being ignorant of music at that time, because I mean, the songs were just produced so well, and Rage is just such an epic band. So
because the Renegades of Funk, the video for that had me thinking it was a legit song, an actual original song too, like an ode to hip hop. And it is an ode to hip hop, but they didn't make the song.
Yeah, they didn't make the song. I feel like the producer of that, or the composer, Africa
Bambaataa.
We've covered one of their songs. I feel like we on a soundtrack. I'm just blanking on which one it was.
We've done so many, it's hard for me to keep track too.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, man, AC/DC epic, and just an awesome song to have in there. The next go ahead.
What about that dude Bob? I forgot to mention him.
Oh yeah, just the random.
The random dude. Yeah, that didn't got no powers at all.
And then did what happened? Did he get killed off
He got killed off too. And Deadpool was just trying to send him home so he wouldn't be killed, but he gets killed 2 seconds later.
Yeah, I guess a massive failure there by Deadpool. But that was kind of random. There were a lot of kind of random things in this movie, just with the Brad Pitt kind of cameo.
Yeah,
weird
the Brad
cameo
Pitt cameo.
There.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, that was really weird, and it's just for a second too. If you're not paying attention, you're gonna miss it. You know.
Yeah, it's one of those blink if you miss it moments. Yeah.
Yeah. So there were some random things. I mean, some of these songs too, I didn't know. I mean, I didn't know this one by Enya, Only Time, which was playing when the Juggernaut, he kind of makes his appearance, which
he
I wasn't
down.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that either. I mean, that was a big surprise to me. Like
me neither, but this Juggernaut, I like him. He's better than the Vinnie Jones Juggernaut from X-Men 3. I'm the Juggernaut, bitch.
who played the Juggernaut in this film? The actor.
In this film?
I don't remember.
I cannot recall, but I can look it up right now that we're both on a computer. Deadpool 2.
But this song, man, is it was definitely, again, the juxtaposition. I mean, I wasn't expecting it. Definitely the dark humor.
Ryan, I think the Juggernaut was CGI from the way it looks, but Ryan Reynolds, he was the voice on the Juggernaut.
Oh, wow. That's cool. And unexpected. There's all kinds of surprises in this movie.
Unexpected. Mm-hmm.
And the director, I mean, I wasn't even David Leitch, I think he's the guy who directed Deadpool 2. He did John Wick. I heard he directed that.
John Wick was a hell of a good action flick.
Yeah. So, yeah, man, he definitely had the experience and credentials to come in and just knock this movie out of the park.
Certainly did. Certainly did, no doubt.
But the cross legs.
Those small legs, those child legs of his.
That was funny.
Yeah, they use the movie Basic Instinct. That scene right there where Deadpool had his legs blown off and he's back in Blind Al's apartment trying to grow his legs back, but he looked like child legs, right?
Yeah.
And then Cable comes in there, and cue the Jerry Goldsmith music from Basic Instinct entitled Cross Legs to the famous Sharon Stone leg crossing She Ain't Got No Panties On scene.
Right. And it was funny because they're all trying to just not look at him and
not look,
trying to avoid looking at him. But dude, Josh Brolin was so funny, especially when they were knocking on dubstep.
Oh yeah. Brolin keeps a straight face the whole time. That's what makes it funny.
Yeah he's just man. And then it brings me back to that thing I was telling you about with them trolling each other on that show and trying to make each other laugh. I bet you that set was so funny to be on.
They couldn't. I don't see how the cameraman could hold the camera straight the entire time.
Yeah, and this follow up track here, "In Your Eyes" by Peter Gabriel. I mean, this was funny too. I mean, I think movie aficionados or people who know the reference, the say anything. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I was remembering it because of the John Cusack that scene where he's got the boombox.
Yeah,
and. And then Deadpool's got the small little boombox,
that comically small boombox. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And he's outside the X Mansion trying to get Colossus his attention.
Yeah.
And another funny Easter egg in that scene: the taxi cab that takes him away when he's done. Right.
Yeah.
The advertisement on top of the taxi cab was for Alpha Flight, Yeah, Alpha Flight, that's a reference to Marvel's Canadian superhero team.
Okay. Did not know that. Good catch.
I only caught it when I saw it a week or two ago when I was looking at the soundtrack for this. I'm like, how did I not catch that the first time?
Yeah. And then the Say Anything, I mean, that reference is pretty fitting for this scene because Deadpool's trying to say anything to get Colossus to come help him.
And he will say anything. That's scary.
And he says anything in this film. I mean, he has like no filter. He's just all over the place. So
neither does his man Weasel. How they keep on punking that Indian boy.
Yeah. So it was cool. I had to kind of like jump back on Google and look up Say Anything again because I was like, I know this. I know what they're making fun of here. Like, or you know, and somebody. I think in my dorm when I was in college had like a poster of that or had it as like their like Facebook profile, you know, picture was like him holding the boot.
John, the radio up.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, I know this. I know what they're doing here.
Mm-hmm. Anytime you see a guy in a trench coat holding a radio up, that's a nod to Say Anything. And there's even a band. What's it called? Named after John Cusack's character, the Lloyd Dobler Band.
Okay.
The Lloyd Dobler Band. Yeah, that's what I meant to say.
Interesting. Okay. And then this song, Welcome to the Party, wasn't as familiar with it. I don't know if you were, but this was played outside of the when they're outside of the Essex house, they're ready to assault it, and this is played and I feel like it's definitely fitting. I mean, it kind of reminds me of that, you know, Welcome to the Party. I feel like this kind of like a nod to Die Hard, right? Where
welcome to the party, pal.
Yeah, where like they're shooting up the cop car. Mm-hmm. That movie, man. It I love that film. It's so classic.
That's the first of its kind, really. It's like the first kind of action comedy, I want to say.
Yeah, and the actor who played he was on what was it? Family Matters. I forget his name.
Reginald Vell Johnson.
Yeah, yeah. He was like, they're cutting my car up. Or they're tearing my car up like Swiss cheese.
I need some assistance now. Now, goddammit, now.
And like, I didn't realize that. What, like, the special effects in that movie are really good for its time. I mean, I didn't notice it when they dropped the body on the police car. And going back, he's hitting reverse. And he hits that, like, that bump or whatever. The body on top of the police car flies up and hits the tree. Is this these things that you don't notice, like these little kind of weird things? And I was like, I was rewatching it and I was like, wow, man, the special effects for this movie are actually really good.
Even some of the dialogue, like what's it called? The scene where John McClane, where he goes to the Christmas party, right? And he, the guy Takagi is showing him around everywhere.
Yeah,
and he goes in his wife's office and sees the dude Ellis on the table doing coke. Yeah. Right, like we'll do the deal tomorrow, babe. All right.
Yeah,
it's like, and he says when he introduces himself to Bruce Willis, his character, he's like, oh, John McClane, Holly's told me a lot about you, and he's like, you miss some.
Oh yeah,
yeah, like you miss some cocaine. You miss cleaning up some cocaine is what he meant.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't like, I think when I was younger and I watched that film, I didn't, of course, you know, I didn't catch those things, you know. It's kind of like we were talking about Jurassic Park before we did this, before we jumped into this. And there are things in that movie that I did not pick up, like, you know, especially Ian Malcolm's character where he's talking to Dr. Sattler in the Jeep. And he's talking about chaos theory and he's like touching her hand and stuff. And I didn't realize it till I was older. I was like, he's totally hitting on her right now. Like,
he is.
Yeah. Like,
but he stops. But he stops when he finds out that what's it called? That him and her and Dr. Grant are actually engaged.
Yeah. 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 That's before the T-Rex kind of busts out of the park. And he's like, oh, you two are. And he's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Is Dr. Sattler single? Why?
Dr. Oh, Sattler, she's not like available, is she?
Oh yeah, that's like, he's in Grant's all serious, never cracks a smile. He's like, why?
Yeah. He's like,
I'm sorry. You guys are yeah.
I swear I can quote like every line from that movie. I mean, I just love that film.
I love the first film, man, and that's why the sequels never worked for me.
Yeah.
It's like the first film was enough of a self-contained story that they didn't need to create a sequel, I didn't think.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of liked Lost World. I mean, definitely the new ones I won't even watch. I don't know. I can't deal with the CGI and all that. Like, it just doesn't look real.
I saw Jurassic World back in, that was 2015, I think it was. And I saw that with my mother in the theater, and we were all the way up front, right? All the way up front. There were no other seats available. We got there late. And the one thing I remember from that whole film is my mother just kept saying from the middle of the film onward, "I can't believe that white girl running around the jungle, them high heel shoes on." That's all my mother could say. That's all I remember from that film because of her.
I don't think she has. She had what, boots on, right? Or
She had high heels on at one point running around
Oh,
the
really?
jungle.
Oh,
Yeah.
weird. That's
Bryce Dallas Howard.
Oh, Jurassic World. Sorry, you were. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking
Thinking
about.
Park?
Yeah. I was thinking Jurassic Park. I was like, Laura Dern, I'm pretty
Dern had
sure
boots on. She had
had
boots on.
boots on. Yeah. So
Yeah,
that's funny.
she was smart.
Yeah. But man, that first film I think is just like revolutionary. Just blew my mind when I was a kid. When I saw that, and I saw it in the theater probably like 3 times. I loved it like that much.
I saw it twice in the theater when I was 10. Yeah, once during the school year when I was a fourth grader, another time during the summer.
Yeah. I mean,
Yeah.
there's nothing like it. I mean, it's just it's unbelievable.
And looking at it as, and when I saw it when I was older, right, around middle school or high school, I started to see a little bit more of the symbolism in the film and
Yeah.
started to understand. Now I take that back. It was later in college when I started looking at directors, how I started to understand how Spielberg was telling that story,
Yeah.
and all the visuals he was using, the what's it called, the connections, the imagery. Like even when Grant gets rid of that raptor claw that he was saving, right,
Yeah.
just tosses it away when and becomes more tender with the kids.
Yeah.
I didn't get that when I was younger, and
Yeah.
even
Like what it was meaning, like he was kind of rough on the edges, and then the kids
yeah.
kind of, you see his softer side come out, you know?
Exactly, yeah. And the biggest symbolism in the film was when the T-Rex, when he saves the others and knocks that other one into that fossil model or whatever, and then bellows out with a banner, "When
Yeah.
dinosaurs ruled the world," falling around. I'm like, I get it. That's dope.
Yeah, the ending of that film is amazing. I didn't notice this till later, but you know, until I saw films like Aliens, you know, like Cameron, some of Cameron's work and the lighting that Spielberg uses, especially the opening scene, which is just freaking incredible with the title sequence of Jurassic Park. It's probably one of the best I've ever seen, to be honest.
That felt like a horror film, the first opening scene.
Oh yeah, I mean
Yeah.
Muldoon and all the you know workers are waiting for it, and you think it's going to be a T-Rex that's going to pop out of the trees or
No.
something, and it's just the cage, and it's on the
Yeah.
forklift or whatever, and they're driving it over to drop it down. But the lighting, I feel like in that film, really was similar to some of the stuff you see in Aliens with the blue kind of blue whitish lighting, you know, even the
Yeah.
flashlights kind of look. And you know, when the power goes out in the park and they're in the office, that lighting there kind of looks like Aliens a bit.
It's probably a nod to Cameron from Spielberg. I mean, some directors, they do learn off one another.
Yeah,
I mean,
and I mean, Aliens wasn't made, you know, too, you know, f long off. I think Aliens was 86. This, yeah.
seven years prior, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it wasn't that long ago, but yeah, man, it's a
True.
great film. Sorry, I went on my little Jurassic Park tangent there, but.
It's all right. It's all right, though. I was gonna say, when you mentioned that, what's it called, that when you saw things in the film that you didn't get when you were a kid, that reminded me of why I loved Married with Children so much when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I got in trouble at school for quoting some Al Bundy lines, using them as insults.
That can
Yeah.
definitely happen.
Yeah. But now looking at when I became 18 and saw the TV show, then it's like, oh, I get that now. That's how the hell did y'all get away with this?
Yeah. I mean, Ed O'Neill, though, what a prolific, you know, actor. I mean, he's great. Great Married with Children. I liked him. You know, he had small little
Gotcha.
parts like Blue Chips. Remember, he was in Blue
Oh yeah.
Chips.
He was one of the reporters in Blue Chips, yeah.
He was good in that, man. He was really good. And then he had that, what's it, the TV show that he was on
Miami,
recently,
oh, Modern Family?
Modern Family. Yeah, he
He
was.
got the Emmy or Golden Globe for that.
Yeah, and he wasn't even like, he kind of fell into acting, and he was gonna be like a football player. You know, I think he got a
Yeah.
tryout with like, I don't know, the
Some
Steelers or
NFL
something.
team.
Yeah.
Yeah,
But
I'm glad he came into acting. I mean, before Married with Children, what's it called? He was on the first season of Miami Vice,
oh
like
yeah, really?
an undercover
Wow.
cop, actually.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so So he's got dramatic chops and comedy chops. I mean, I'm glad he was never typecast as Al Bundy, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I really liked him, even though he had a small part in Blue Chips. I always remember him saying, like, we're going to get this guy. We're going to get the great Pete Bell.
Oh, speaking of Blue Chips, they finally put that Joan out on Blu-ray, too.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
At last.
What a great movie, man. I can't believe Shaquille O'Neal, man. He's like done everything. He's like a DJ, a professional basketball player. He's an actor, and he's funny in Blue Chips. I mean,
he is funny. I mean, he was a younger man back then, but he still got those comedy chops.
Yeah, he's got that dry sense of humor, you know, like where
he does. Even the commercials he did back then, what's it called, where he's like, he's too big for everything.
Yeah.
And he goes to Denny's and orders, and the meal looks like this small. And he looks at the camera like, and I ordered the big breakfast.
Yeah, and he's a hard worker, man. He's always, you know, I mean, he's always working. He's always doing commercials. And, I mean, he's cool, man. And he listens to some pretty cool music, too. I think he's a big Rage Against the Machine fan.
He tried his hand at rapping once, too. I remember that.
Yeah, I think he DJs a little bit, too. But, yeah, man, I Blue Chips is definitely a great movie. I'll have to check out the Blu-ray, see if I can get my hands on that. But okay. then we go back to the soundtrack here for tomorrow.
Sorry for the tangent, folks.
No, it's all right. It was good. I enjoyed it. This is funny. Tomorrow, because
tomorrow.
This is another joke I didn't get initially when I was watching the film, and then realized that
the future.
Yeah, the tomorrow was used in Annie, right? You know, I mean, most people, I think, know that. I knew it, but I didn't realize that it was kind of like playing off the whole orphanage thing.
Yeah, like until you make the connection there. In fact, you know what? I'm just making that connection now, too, thanks to you.
Because, like, they're outside of the Essex house, which is essentially an orphanage for mutants.
For the mutants, yeah.
Yeah, and then I forget the name of the kid.
Firefist.
Yeah, Firefist. He wants to get back at the headmaster.
Mr. Essex.
Yeah, so, I mean, it just fits in well. But again, that kind of dark humor aspect of it with using, because it's more of, I think, an uplifting song, right? Like when you hear
it.
And like I always associate it to Annie, you know, like. Yeah.
When I heard it used here and how it was used, I was like, wait a minute, this is not to Cable because he's from tomorrow, the future.
Yeah, I didn't think about that.
That's how I was thinking about it. That's how I saw it. Yeah, but the orphanage thing, them being outside of an orphanage, that one, I didn't make that connection until you mentioned it.
Yeah, it was I don't know. My parents were always probably my mom, I would say, is liked musicals, you know, and I wasn't always a huge fan of them, but I always remember her, you know, having it would come on the TV too, Annie. So we'd hear that tomorrow, like, you know, that song. And when you hear it, and it's awesome how they used it in this scene.
My mother was a fan of musicals too. In fact, the first movie she ever took me to was the 86 Little Shop of Horrors. And that's one I have memorized as well, all the way through too, because of her.
Yeah.
And I love that film.
Yeah. It's crazy the things you remember, you know, when you're a kid. But music's like that. I mean, that's why music's great. You can associate songs with certain, at least I do, certain parts memories of my life. Yeah, yeah.
Same here. Like certain mixtapes, mix CDs that I made back in college that I still have. Yeah, some of them just take me back to a certain period, a certain time in my life when I was of a certain mindset, a different variant of me.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. But this song is this great comedy here, great dark humor. And then the acoustic version of Take On Me, which we're going to cover next by, what's it, A-ha? Is that
A-ha.
A-ha, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, that's the band. I think, I don't know if they actually did. They did the original version, you know, the one with the video. You know the song,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Take On Me, yeah.
Yeah, and but this one right here, I don't think they did this acoustic version though.
Yeah, so like I think it's funny because I always associate this song to like going. I hear it a lot at the at sports games, like, you know, at the Nats. Like if I go to a Nationals game, they play it a lot in the stadium, especially when that one high pitch of the song, like part of the song, but they The acoustic version, I think, is really done really well here, and it gives you kind of a more of a romantic feel to it.
Yeah, like it's more atmospheric and more ethereal, which goes hand in hand with the whole afterlife scene.
Yeah, where they play it there. I wasn't expecting it. You know, it was kind of surprised me that they would use this song.
Same here. I mean, the first time I heard the song, the original version, was in elementary school on an episode of Beavis and Butthead when they were flipping channels, going through the music videos and giving their commentary on them. And one of the things I remember saying, before saying, the fuck, Beavis, they were like, go Speed Racer, go Speed Racer. Like that, probably because of the drawings that they saw, the cartoon-like drawings they saw within the video. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Beavis and Butthead. When you mentioned that, man, that what a great show, even though the concept was kind of two guys, you know, just sitting there on the couch.
Dumbass teenagers. They're just dumb. They're not even stoned. They're not even, and they think they can, they're deluded. They think they can pull chicks, but they really can't.
I can't believe it got as popular as it did. Right. And then it blew up and MTV, like, I almost think, I'm like, what were they thinking putting this show on the air? Because it's just kind of, it's so, like you said, it's kind of goofy and almost stupid to an extent. Think about it.
It's supposed to be. I mean, there is a certain level of satire in it a little bit, like making fun of the videos that didn't really make the cut on MTV proper.
Yeah. And the commentary, I mean, like, they'll just say these like wild kind of foolish things that are going on in the video. They'll start, you know, talking about Chris Cornell during Black Hole Sun or something. And they're talking about, you know, something ridiculous, you know?
Yeah. When they played Stone Temple Pilots Plush, when they played that video on there, I remember, but it was like, this dude sounds like the guy from Pearl Jam. And they're like, yeah, he does, Beavis. Yeah, he does, Butthead. And they're like, well, doesn't matter anyway. They both suck. And then Beavis like, hey, Butthead, Pearl Jam doesn't suck. They're from Seattle. Oh, yeah.
And then they like just break into a fight or something, start fighting each other. You
know? Or start dancing on the dance floor, like punching, kicking, or Butthead be like.
It's like, wild, man.
I'm like, y'all got that white boy dance.
The movie was funny, too.
The movie was funny as hell. And also a callback to Bruce Willis.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, the next song here, "We Belong" by Pat Benatar. This is another one that was a little odd.
It's definitely corny and cheesy to choose it, especially considering the remaining members of X-Force and X-Men just walk off together from Essex House.
Yeah, it was definitely a little weird. I don't know much about Pat Benatar.
She's a New York singer. That's not her real name. Her real name is Patricia Andrew Key, one of them long ass Polish names like Przybylowski. but she's had several albums. I have one album on my shelf in the back of me over there, Crimes of Passion, where it had Hit Me With Your Best Shot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. She did that one. That's good call out there. I forgot that she wrote that song or did that song, but, kind of odd, but I guess maybe that was the point. They were going for an awkward kind of vibe for this scene.
You've heard Hell Is For Children, haven't you?
No, I haven't heard that one.
Well, that's one of her hardest songs right there. And one of her most controversial ones, because it covers child abuse and it's a heavy, and it's a real good hard rocker too.
Yeah. Then they put Cher at the end, right? With if you can turn back time.
I'm like, I'm just waiting for you to show the music video for that, Ryan Reynolds, where she's on a ship full of sailors, actual sailors who haven't gotten no pussy in months.
Oh my Lord.
The
ending. If I could turn back time,
literally.
Yeah. Because, and then, you know, he's, I guess kind of, again, the Wolverine thing as well. He's, I think that was the angle he was taking, or they were taking for this last song. Because
I'm cleaning up the timelines. I mean, like, yeah, the X-Men universe, it's hard to say what movies fit where and what timeline they fit into, actually. You're right.
Yeah, and especially with the Spider-Man, the Spider-Man No Way Home, right? That they do that a lot in that film.
What they do in that film is basically just establish that the other Spider-Man films are just like what we saw in Last Action Hero, movies being other dimensions under themselves. and you can open holes in their dimensions and bring people here, which is what they did in Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah.
Tobey Maguire from the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie universe, and Andrew Garfield from the Amazing Spider-Man universe.
Yeah, it was kind of cool when how they did that. I think from a script, you know, and like storyline perspective.
Yeah.
And I also think from a business perspective, it makes a lot of sense, because then you can just, you can build the franchise out more. You can put more movies out. And I mean, it's smart, really. It's genius, really.
It's genius, and it's fan service too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that Spider-Man film, No Way Home, that's top five for my Marvel films right there.
How'd you feel about Tom Holland kind of, and him?
He's the best.
Yeah, you like.
He's the best.
Yeah.
He's the best Spider-Man. He's the best Spider-Man we've had on screen. What was missing from Toby was that sarcastic motor mouth sense of humor that Spider-Man has. Andrew Garfield, same thing with him too. But what's it called? Tom Holland, he got it right, because I think the MCU version of Spider-Man, which he plays, they take their cue from the old 90s Spider-Man animated series that used to be on Fox, which had a lot of that kind of humor up in there.
Okay.
That quick-witted, fast-paced.
Yeah.
And like a rogue gallery of villains. Good God. If they do a fourth Spider-Man film, I hope they do one of the more sillier villains, like the Spot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was kind of curious how you felt about, cause like, you know, like you said, Toby, and then you had Andrew Garfield, who did what he was the
Amazing
other...
Spider-Man.
Yeah. So
they're going to do a third one because of the success of No Way Home.
Yeah, and then aren't they making a third Guardians as well? Or
yeah, they are. They are. It's not going to be out till next year, I think. But yeah, James Gunn is still doing a third Guardians of the Galaxy film, and probably paying out the ass for more money to use for those songs.
Yeah, exactly. That I can't imagine the licensing for some of these movies.
It's that Disney money. That Disney money they can pay.
Yeah, exactly. But
just like Amazon, just like how they can pay for The Boys. They're pretty much on par with MCU now. Special effects, songs.
Yeah. No, you're definitely right. But this was awesome, man. I really enjoyed covering the soundtrack. Deadpool 2, we finally got to it.
At last, yeah.
So I had a blast doing this.
Oh, and Tyler Bates. We didn't mention Tyler Bates. He did the score for the film too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's done scores for films like Dawn of the Dead, 300, Sucker Punch, the first two Halloweens. Not the John Carpenter ones, mind you.
Is this
I think the Rob Zombie ones or the other ones that have come out in recent years.
Okay.
That's another franchise whose timelines need to be cleaned up.
Yeah. It just seems like they randomly do one, like they'll either do a remake every like couple of years, and it's just kind of random. It's like, I don't know.
Chainsaw Massacre.
I feel like do people really get into Michael Myers that much? I mean, like in that storyline. I mean, it's epic, but I mean.
But it's like they overdo it. It's like the same thing they do with Leatherface and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. There's like a new one or a new series every year.
Yeah. I mean,
every few years.
I feel like the movies now, like they're just not, I don't know, maybe like Jordan Peele's movies. Like I think I'm hearing a lot of good things about those and the writing and how it's actually scary. Some, you know, the movies that he does and he puts out, but I feel like a lot of like movies aren't scary anymore. Just like, you know,
the last scary movie I saw really was Hereditary. That frightened me.
Okay.
On a psychological level and jumpy level. Now, Jordan Peele, I wouldn't say he's a horror movie maker. Nah, I mean, his films will make you jump. I mean, Us definitely was creepy in certain parts, and so was Get Out. But really, those films are social satires disguised as horror flicks.
Okay.
Yeah. Because you see, Get Out, that was about race. Us was about privilege and class.
Right.
And the next film, Nope, the trailer for that's misleading. I don't think it's about aliens.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, he's so talented, though. I mean, as a, you know, a creator, just... you know, originally doing comedies, right, with Saturday mm-hmm. Night. Did he do Saturday Night Live, I think? Or
Mad TV.
Mad TV. And then he did did a lot of stuff for Comedy Central with Key and Peele.
Key and Peele, they were funny. Even though Dave Chappelle facetiously said, them niggas stole my act.
the thing about that, like, I think it's just, it's really awesome how these comedians can they have so much range. Like they can do different things. You know, Bill Burr's doing stuff, you know, with acting, and he was in Breaking Bad. which is another great show. Did you see the movie El Camino? I liked it.
I saw it, but I didn't think it was necessary. It's like Breaking Bad, the series ended on a good note. So like a continuation, an epilogue really wasn't necessary. Now, if they wanted to create a movie for something that ended on a bad note, do that for Dexter. Of course, they tried to do that with Dexter New Blood. Did you see that?
No.
Good. That was like an eight part series on Showtime that show what Dexter's been up to since the series ended. And I'm like, why did y'all do this? Dexter is not the same guy that we saw during the series.
Yeah, and a lot of these shows, I mean, Breaking Bad, I would say more so with the Better Call Saul, they're doing these prequels, which I think Better Call Saul is good because
that was good.
The thing that's really cool about it is like you see these like the whole universe, you know, how you know, like for example, Crazy Eight. Like I didn't really know from the beginning that like he was through Better Call Saul, he has more of a role there, but like in Breaking Bad, he's really only the first season and one or two episodes.
Yeah.
But I didn't pick up on it until I rewatched Breaking Bad. I was like, wow, they're making, like, they're explaining more about his character and his involvement with the, with that cartel and, the Salamancas and all of that. And
how Mike came to work for Gus.
Yeah. Yeah, that was cool. I liked how they did that, but
and why he's so loyal to that dude too.
Yeah, yeah. And Jonathan Banks is such a good actor, man.
He's a DMV boy.
Yeah, he's amazing, and that's one of my favorite characters. Mike Ehrmantraut, like,
yeah, he's so dry humor too. Like I remember when they kidnapped Lydia in Breaking Bad, and they had the gun to what did they say? I'm going to take my pistol and shoot you in the head. Now, if you make a sound, what am I going to do? You're going to put your pistol to my head. That's right. And what am I going to do? You're going to shoot me. That's right. In the head. Very good. And this is a pistol, not a gun.
When he goes and remember Chow, they were holding him
in the head.
Yeah. I wasn't expecting that. I was like, that's kind of brutal, man. Like
for not telling you guys about him sooner. What the fuck is he supposed to do? Give Morse code?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Like, it's not like he was going behind your back or nothing like that. I mean, shooting him in the hand is punishment for that. That I understand.
Yeah. And then Chow would get taken out. And then that scene's pretty crucial, too. Like
yeah, Mike used the toy on the door to fool the blonde-haired dude, Chris.
Yeah.
Because Lydia paid him to take out Chow and the rest of those nine guys who could snitch.
Does he have a role like in Chris in Better Call Saul at all?
I don't recall this time, but given how detailed they are and how they're doing another season, most likely we'll see him.
Yeah. Well, and, hey man, this was awesome. I really enjoyed it.
One more thing like Columbo. Yeah.
Okay.
We own this city. Did you see that?
I haven't seen it yet, man. It looks really good.
Yes. It's reminiscent of The Wire. It really is. And they got a lot of the actors from The Wire on here, but in different roles. Some of them as cops, like Marlo and O-Dog. They're cops.
Yeah, that Jamie Hector, I mean, he's an amazing actor.
He is. People think all he could do was Marlo, and that didn't take much. Nah.
I mean, he had a role in Bosch. You know, he has a role in, I'm leaving probably a lot out here, but I mean, he's in
Heroes,
We Own the City.
Power.
Yeah. Power. Like, I mean,
Heroes. Yeah.
So he's amazing.
And Johnny Bernthal, he was the lead character, and it's based on a true story. All that stuff is true.
How many seasons is it? Is it just one
season and six episodes? It was a mini series.
Okay. Yeah.
Which irks me because you can't talk about Baltimore police corruption in just six episodes, even if it is based on a true story.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I'm David Simon, you know, I always love watching his stuff. So whenever he does a series or a show, I'm usually glued to it. I guess I need to get HBO Max because him
and Pelicanos, they both wrote every episode of this series.
Yeah.
And they got the director from King Richard to do every episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
And speaking of King Richard, thank you, Will Smith. Thank you for making it difficult for comedians nowadays to do their jobs.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Hey, look at Chappelle. Chappelle got speared by somebody.
Yeah, we live in crazy times, man. But
we do.
This was awesome. Okay. Good times. Subscribe to RoadTunes Reviews. Subscribe to Cy, to your show.
catch me, the 301 Colored Commentators. Yeah, we're on every platform. And catch my YouTube channel, my Marvel YouTube channel, The Shack House. But I love working with Andrew. And check out our merchandise site, too, for Rotoons Reviews.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you guys for watching and listening. And we'll see you next time. This podcast is available on my YouTube channel, Rotoons Reviews. It's also available on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and other major podcast distributors as well. So if you don't mind, please leave me some feedback. I'd really appreciate that. If you'd like to connect with me on social media, I'm on Facebook, Twitter. My Twitter handle is @RotoonsRevs. I'm on Instagram, and I'm also on the Untappd app. My username is BrewTuned. This is Andrew signing off. Cheers.